Alrighty.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone, the podcast where we highlight nonprofit leaders in the trenches who share the strategies and tactics they use to grow their organizations and make a difference each day. As we like to say, if you want to be discouraged by a general sense of decay, read the news. But if you want to be inspired by concrete stories of growth, talk to a nonprofit. Here's to the modern day superheroes, the nonprofit leaders. Let's dive in.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Nonprofit Growth Show. I'm your host, Joe Whipple, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Taylor Bunn on today's episode. Taylor is a co-founder and the executive director of Hope for All, a nonprofit out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Hope for All is in its super early stages of development, and I mean really, really early, which is why I'm so excited to have Taylor on today and to actually have you follow her journey along with us. This is going to be a multi-part series where we're going to get to talk to Taylor every couple months and see what new problems she's facing, what kind of solutions she's come up with, and really what her overall experience is with a brand new organization. Taylor, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So real quick, I want to give the listeners a brief background of just your experience in the nonprofit world, because it's not like you're brand new to this. However, mm-hmm. you are kind of new to the side of starting from concept to reality. So if you could just walk us through what got you to this point, that would be great.
I've always worked in nonprofits. I've spent my whole career in nonprofits. So I studied theater in college, and then right after that started working in theaters around Dallas, mostly children's theater, and then decided I wanted to start teaching. And so I went and taught middle school theater arts, actually where I went to middle school. So that was kind of fun. And then just was wanting to do more. I'm always kind of wanting to do more. So I went and did a Master of Arts in Arts Management and Entrepreneurship, and then an MBA at SMU, and they call it the Mamba program. And that was really where I got my nonprofit education in thinking academically and really learned all the parts and pieces. And so then after that, I ended up at Laying the Foundation, which is an education nonprofit in Dallas, or it was at the time. And then we ended up merging with the National Math and Science Initiative. So I spent a couple of years there working with business development grants, and started doing more with just that program management and development piece. And then while I was there, I just kind of wanted to get back into schools. I missed being around kids. I missed being in the trenches of public education, and had an opportunity to go to the Carrollton Farmers Branch School District, which is a suburb in Dallas-Fort Worth, and work in their advanced academics department. So that really gave me a lot of exposure to working with gifted kids, advanced placement, international baccalaureate, dual enrollment. I got a really good, deep experience with working with those programs, learning more about that and college readiness, and then also working with students who, many of whom were traditionally underserved, first-generation college students, and getting to apply that. And then I think, like many of us who want to try new things all the time, started feeling like I wanted to get out and try something else, and had an opportunity to go back to the National Math and Science Initiative to work in operations, which is something I had never really done before on that scale and wasn't really sure about it, but got into it and loved it. And then I did that for a while, moved into program management, and then moved into a role as a senior program manager where I had an opportunity to lead a team of program managers. And so then was there for a little bit longer, and then finally was ready to start Hope for All. So that's where I am now.
So what really made you, because it's one thing to go from, you know, working for nonprofits and being associated with the industry to like, all right, it's time to be a co-founder and have a, you know, the title of executive director and be the leader in the face of an organization. What inclined you to like take that step?
Opportunity and good fortune are the quick answers. So I started this with my stepfather, who is in the horse racing industry, and ended up very blessed and doing well on the sale of a racetrack. And he really wanted to do something good and helpful with those funds, because we've been very fortunate and we've always wanted to be able to give back. And this allowed us to do it on a larger scale. And so this is something we had been talking about and planning to figure out, how can we really give back in a strong way? And what we knew was we didn't want to just write checks, which is great. And if you can do that, you should do that. But we wanted to get more involved. We're both very hands-on people. We like to be in the middle of things. And so what initially started as sort of a part-time venture, I was ready for a change and really just wanted to start something from the beginning. I've always been kind of entrepreneurial. And because this is where I've spent my whole career and my education has been in the nonprofits field, I felt ready to go and lead something. And so we talked about it and I was like, hey, let's try this full time. We've got the funding ready. We know what we want to do. So let's just do it. Let's just go big and make it happen. So we are.
And what's been the hardest part so far? What is the biggest challenge? Because to put a timeline in for people listening, it's only been how many months since?
Three.
Yeah.
Today so it's been is officially 3 months. 3 months. Yes.
3 months. And you're going through, I know, like tons of stuff with filing paperwork and getting all of that ready. But what has been the biggest challenge so far in 3 months?
Waiting. Joe, I think waiting has been the biggest challenge for me. I am someone who just wants to start things and go and just see what happens. And you can't really do that when you're starting something like this. There's processes that you have to follow. And so I was just talking to a partner about this the other day. Academically, I feel very much like I know what I'm doing, right? Like I've always studied this. I've always been doing it professionally. And so I'm like, I got this. I know what to do. But then when you're in it every day and are just having to kind of figure it out, and I am the leader of Hope for All, but I'm also the only employee for Hope for All. So it's a different experience where it's just you. And so I'm just ready to go. I'm ready to go and start and meet people and do things. But there's paperwork. You have to file your 501c3. You have to, which takes 6 to 12 months. And the time to get everything together. So it's a lengthy process. We are filed. We're official in Texas. So we are a business.
Ooh, nice.
Woohoo. That happened in July, though, just to put a timeline on it. We had our first meeting with the lawyers at the end of May and then got everything to file for a business July 27th. And so I've got my stamp certificate for that. But then it took a couple more months to get the 501c3 paperwork together, because you have to be really clear about who you are and what you're doing and give support. So it's just all of that. It's just the waiting. And so
An early test of patience, especially for somebody who's so ambitious, because if you're going to start something like this, you're not somebody to just sit back and be like, all right, well, whatever happens. You're like, I need to be doing something. I want to be on the move. Like, what can we do next? You know,
exactly. So the nice thing is we can do stuff. We've been doing stuff.
Yeah. What have you been doing? Yeah, I would love to know.
I've been doing a lot of networking. And meeting people and telling them who we are and learning. I've been doing a lot of just learning. This is the first time I've been in charge of my own professional development budget. So I've been taking advantage of that. That's been really fun. But the first official event we did was, this was the worst place for me to be. We have an organization called DFW Rescue Me here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, which is a dog rescue organization. Which you know from our previous conversations that I will adopt any animal. And so,
yes, I do indeed.
I spent all day at the State Fair of Texas, and some of my board members came. It was really fun, surrounded by dogs that need homes. And so we were able to go. We were the sponsor of the day, and it was so much fun. So we spent all day getting to pet dogs and walk dogs and help connect them. I felt like I got to be a matchmaker for these dogs because
Not a bad way to spend your day.
No, it was awesome. And so I really got to know these dogs. And I was able to find people and be like, you know what? Have you look? Come look at Walter. He's small, and I think he would like where you are. Or you're going to need one who gets along with other dogs, and that's Gilbert over here. So it was just, it was a really rewarding experience in a way that I didn't fully expect. I knew we would have fun. I knew we would love it, but just that feeling of being there, I think Hope for All really clicked for me in that moment, because it was the first time we really gave back in a really hands-on way. And I saw the benefits of collaboration and how important that is. And so while we were there, I did like a Facebook Live video, and it's been viewed 2,000 times now, which our previous video had been viewed 41 times, I think. So just by virtue, well, I mean, it's cute dogs and people will watch cute dogs. But just by virtue of that collaboration and it getting shared and it moving along, I mean, that's 2,000 people that saw these dogs and saw Hope for All and saw DFW Rescue Me. And then that's been... We had another experience with an inclusive playground called Playground Adventures in Grand Prairie, Texas, that we're working with. And same thing, we went and did a live video tour there, and it's been viewed a few hundred times now. So just those experiences are what is most important to me right now, because it's important for marketing. I mean, that's something all nonprofits have to do, is to get your name out. But it's just really shown me how important it is to get out and partner with others and really collaborate and help each other out, because we can't just be in this together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that's really good for others to hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's really good for others to hear that, like, during these lag times, during this period where there's literally nothing you can do about paperwork going through these processes that you have no impact on, there are things you can do to further the growth of your organization, even if you aren't fully established, or right, to build out your website, to build out your base, and to give the listeners some context into what Hope for All does. I can either take a stab at this or you can. But I think that so, I mean, you've talked about dogs and then you've also talked about playgrounds. You're not an animal organization. You're not a people organization necessarily, but you're an organization that connects, you know, things that will hopefully make the world or the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you know, a better, more hopeful place. So you identify, you know, projects that need assisted with, or people that need extra support, or areas for innovation, or, you know, an animal organization that needs a little extra assistance, and you help support them through connecting them and giving them this platform that is more than just what they currently had. Would you say that that's kind of accurate as to what you guys are trying to do?
Yeah, that is accurate. So I see us primarily as a connector and a collaborator, because we're not a large nonprofit. We don't have a ton of money, and we're just quite simply never going to be able to move the needle with giant grants. And that's not what we want to do. There are organizations already doing that. So we really focus on that connection and what I say is people power, where I would rather highlight somebody on we have an Awareness Wednesday program that we do every 2 weeks. So I want to highlight organizations, and then I want to bring you volunteers, and I want to find those volunteers, and that introduces them to Hope for All, and that introduces them to other organizations, and it gets work done. I think so many nonprofit organizations have so many things that they need to get done that they just never get to, because you have to prioritize your time. And so I think by virtue of just saying, like, hey, we're going to come and help you put up fences or pick up trash or do some prospect research for you, those are things we can help with that some others might not have time to get to. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love that.
Just in closing those gaps.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to take a step back because I know you have an extensive background just within the industry itself. So it would be one thing if you were walking into this, you know, with no experience with building relations, with donor relations or marketing or anything like that. It's another given, you know, your history and now where you are. So based on what you have gone through and the positions that you have held, what are some things you've learned that you're excited to try out? Maybe strategies, marketing strategies, donor relations with Hope for All. And what are some things that you have, you know, gone through that you've now told yourself, all right, I learned the hard way and I'm not going to do that again?
That second list is quite long, Joe. I think probably the most impactful lesson I've learned along the way is don't wait to do good, because it's easy to stop and pause and think and get caught up in, is this the right thing? Is this perfectly aligned with our mission? Our donors going to love this. Can we tell a good story? Let's think out all of the logistics. And then it goes so long that the moment has passed. So just don't wait to do good. And it's okay to figure things out as you go. It's never going to be perfect in the nonprofit world or really in any job. So I think you learn by doing things. It's very challenging to learn if you're just sitting back and waiting for all of the paperwork to come through or to get the right hits on your social media or to meet the perfect collaborator. You just have to get out there and do things. And so I think that's one of the big things. So I think another lesson is to be flexible and adaptable, which means you have to really be open to other people's perspectives and listen. I think sometimes nonprofits assume we know what the solution is. And you kind of go in and want to solve people's problems with what you think will solve their problem, but that's not always what they need. So it's really important when you're trying to help people to take the time to uncover what the root causes are. Sometimes I say it's a similar idea to where like the same kids are always in detention every day in a school, right? Like, but like, so that, yeah, but like, you know, middle school teacher. So something's not working. That intervention is not working for those students. Like if they're still there every day. In the same way, there are so many big issues that we're still fighting in the same ways when there's so much money going to them. I think hunger is a big one. Are the same people always going to the food bank? Are the same people always homeless? You know, we have a huge problem with homeless veterans in this country. There's still a ton of plastic in the ocean. We tried to get rid of plastic bags in Texas at the grocery stores, and it was this huge thing. And now we have plastic bags again. And so I think for things like that, if the interventions aren't appealing or simple to implement, the general public is not going to do it. So we'd be better taking time to figure out what are the root causes, what is causing people to be homeless, what is causing people to be hungry, what is causing people to continue grabbing the plastic bags and ignore those kinds of problems. And I think that's an interesting shift that I've seen in the nonprofit field as younger generations are moving into it. As you know, millennials get such a bad rap, but I really feel like the millennials are going to change the world because they're paying more attention to these things and they innovate. And I think some of that is just because of growing up with the internet and technology. You're about 10 years younger than me, I think. And so we grew up at really different times where we didn't get internet in my house and a computer until I was in sixth grade. You probably had that from birth. And so you've got access to information in ways that we didn't before. And so I think that's a really exciting opportunity in the nonprofit field. And something that I've learned along the way is figure out what's really going on. Like, don't stop at the surface level, because we know more now. We have access to more information than we've ever had. So use that information and then act on it and iterate and see what happens, but collaborate. I think that's so important too. So you have to learn from other people and uncover those root causes and make sure you're open to your solution not being the right one. Or better yet, go find somebody that needs help and ask them what they really need. And one thing I like is this principle of asking why 5 times. So I think that can really help you get to the root cause of most issues. So if you take, like, I'm hungry, why? Because I don't have any food. Why? Because I haven't had a job in 3 months. Why? Because I don't have a car to get to interviews and there's not a bus line that goes to my house. Why? Poverty. You know, I mean, that was not the best example, but
I was actually really impressed. I thought I'd lose you somewhere around like question 3. I was like, can she stick with this? But yeah, you have a theater background, so you know how to run
That's my theater major. That's right. That's right. So if anyone listening, if your child wants to major in theater arts, please know that I did, and I am gainfully employed and can improv on a podcast. So
the whole podcast
skills. You know what I mean? Like, this is a
No. Right.
Theater is a skill.
Yeah, for sure. I've always had a love for theater too. I never once studied it, but I'm fascinated by it. I love the idea of having to be so quick on your feet with your thinking, as well as how you will then express it. Because it's one thing to think it and digest your thoughts. It's another to actually have words for it in the moment.
It's really cool. Yeah, like, jokes aside, my theater training has been as helpful, if not more, than my MBA in working in nonprofits, especially when you're in front of people trying to get them giving you
money. The relationship side is huge.
It's so important, because you have to think on your feet all the time and be flexible.
Yeah.
So it has helped.
So I have 2 questions for you after you said all of that. Were you a detention kid?
Oh, no. Heavens, no. I am a rule follower.
Did you ever get a detention?
Never. No.
Never won detention. Wow.
And can I tell you a story?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So when I was in third grade, this is how traumatic, like, this is how much I didn't get in trouble, because I'm still traumatized. Like, the fact that I even remember this story. When I was in third grade, my teacher in class came and got me and said, "You are in really big trouble." And, like, I just started bawling immediately, because I had never been in trouble before. And I was so afraid she was disappointed in me. And then she was like, "Oh no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Like, you can't joke with me about being in trouble." I'm such a rule follower.
So I
am the black sheep in my family on that.
I have had 2 detentions. In my life. One, I'm calling BS on to this day. I just don't think it was fair. The other, I can talk about the other. One, I feel like there's just too much. The other, I definitely see as justified. I was in 8th grade, biology. We were doing a project with pipe cleaners, and I was always the one that liked to, you know, get the laugh out of my friends, be the center of attention. If I was ever bored, I was going to do something extreme to make myself and all of my friends not bored. So we finished the project early and, you know, we're just hanging out at one of the tables and we start talking, what would happen if we shoved this pipe cleaner in this electrical outlet? Well, long story short, I put the pipe cleaner in the outlet. Nothing happened. I bent it around to the other side as if I was going to put it in the other side of the outlet, which was just the stupidest thing ever. Like, very, very dangerous. And I wasn't planning on doing it, but it's metal on metal and it's a current. Currents can jump. Like, it doesn't actually have to touch. And this current jumped and the whole thing exploded. There was like a mushroom cloud of smoke in the classroom. I'm like, I run across the classroom to get the fire extinguisher. And, you know, as a result, I got a detention. I didn't get anything more than a detention. I probably could have been suspended. And I wasn't hurt at all, thank goodness. And nobody else was hurt except the janitor who was in charge of getting the pipe cleaner out, attempted to pull it out with metal pliers, and he shocked himself. But that was my detention story. But other than that, I wasn't.
You only got a detention.
I know,
for that.
I know, I know. But other than that, I avoided them as well.
Did you learn something though?
I learned that I should not mess with electricity.
Like, you just explained current very well. Did you know that prior to sticking the pipe cleaner in the outlet?
No. And it wasn't until later when I was taking physics in high school that I brought the story up to my physics teacher, who told me that if I would have shoved it in like the hot side of the outlet, I would have just been shocked and it could have actually like really done some damage. I mean, I could have died if it would have traveled through me in the wrong way. But at the very least, like it would have sucked.
There's two really important educational lessons in that story that in a way, you did something good by doing that, because number one, that gave you a prior experience to bring into your later learning, which it's very important to bring in students' prior knowledge, which your teacher did. Hey, remember that time you stuck a pipe cleaner in an outlet? That's a current, and here's what could have happened. So now you're able to talk about that because you know that, and it shows the importance of experiential learning, which is, you know, getting out and learning by doing, which you did in perhaps not a safe way, but you did.
Yeah, there was a lot of experimental unsafe learning happening in my
childhood. Very unsafe learning, but you won't do it again. And so education is something that hope for all funds, and experiential learning is something I believe strongly in. So if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex and need some funding for an experiential learning opportunity, please come to Hope for All.
And whatever you do, do not try to play with electricity at home.
Yeah, not that.
That's
don't
not the
that.
Kind of experimental learning we're talking about.
No, that's yes. Organized, responsible experiential learning.
And so my second question then, coming from that, and again, these don't really have to do with the nonprofit world, but I think they're entertaining topics.
Hey,
the plastic bag situation in Texas didn't work because it was what was the approach? Have you guys started charging an extra fee and people are just willing to pay the extra fee? Did they just try to strip them out entirely? What's going on there?
So, it was, you had to pay 5 cents
gotcha.
For a plastic bag, and people didn't want to do that. This is what I will say. Texans will band together if they feel like their rights are being squandered. Yeah, it was 5 cents for a bag. And then let me tell you my theory on this, Joe.
I'd love to hear it.
People, here's the thing. This is why the plastic thing did, like, at its root, here's why I think the plastic bag thing didn't work. Not even just here, like other places as well. Because you went to the store and people were prepared. But you have to be prepared with your own bag if you're not going to use the plastic bags. Right? So when you get there, you're confronting people with, you're going to have to pay 5 cents for each of these bags because you weren't prepared. And so that kind of puts them on them. And it's not sold as, for 5 cents, we're going to give you an opportunity to do something really good for the environment. Well, okay, the plastic bag's not. But your options at that point are pay a dollar for the reusable bag that you're probably not going to remember
right.
to have with you.
I never remember mine.
Or I never remember mine. Or pay 5 cents for the plastic bag. Well, I mean, economically, the 5 cent bag makes more of a difference. And I think you've caught people unaware. So I think charging for a bag wasn't a good idea. I think you should have just removed them because, like, you can't give somebody a choice.
Cold turkey. Cut it out.
Make the unappealing option the economical one.
Right. Yeah. So for me, I try to avoid plastic as much as I can, and I have reusable bags. I would say 95% of the time I forget to bring them in, but by doing so, I've realized over the last year that I don't need a bag. I put everything back into my cart. I take it out to my car. I put it right into my car. And and again, my situation's a little different because, you know, I have a built out Sprinter van that is my home. So I don't have to then drive into my garage and then make a couple extra trips. Although I don't think I would have an issue with that at this point. But yeah, so for me,
you also live small. So you're
very much a minimalist.
Yeah.
And that's the first time anybody's on this podcast has even heard about my living situation. They're probably like, what? This guy lives in a van?
I feel like that's a podcast on its own.
Yeah.
I'm going to interview you about that one in the next one.
Yeah, we can talk about it. But getting back on track. So we digress.
Yes.
So back to Hope for All. Hope for All, to me, it sounds like, you know, B2B and B2C relationships are going to be equally as important. You will not be able to help anyone if you have a bunch of potential volunteers with nowhere to go. And you will not be able to help a bunch of people in need if you don't have connections with the general public. What kind of strategies, marketing strategies, just, you know, donor relations to help with this kind of stuff, do you guys see happening in 2020? Or is that something you're really still figuring out?
We're figuring it out. We're kind of right now like throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
I actually tried recently to understand that metaphor, and it does work if you've not tried it, but it doesn't work with wheat pasta the same way it works with like the good starchy bleached flour pasta. So that's just a tip from my own experiential learning.
Yeah, experiential learning.
Yeah. So we're figuring it out. It costs money, and I'm a miser about weird things. Like if I can get something for free, I'm definitely going to take that option. So we're doing a lot of social media right now.
Okay.
Which is good. We're figuring it out. I think we have 3 Twitter followers now, which is very exciting.
What's your handle?
Even me. It is at @hope_all_tx.
Sweet. At Hope for All Texas. Not the number sign, just the 4, like
right.
What you said. Okay.
Exactly that. And then we have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have a YouTube channel. YouTube is where we do. So Awareness Wednesday, this is a good time to talk about Awareness Wednesday.
Of course.
Is something we started to raise awareness, but it is also a marketing tool. So I have noticed an increase in views on that, which has been fun to see. The first one was just me doing a, hey, here's Hope for All with a screencast of our website and like how to apply and all of that stuff. It's been viewed, I think, 13 times now. The next one was we did a Zoom interview with videos with the founder of DFW Rescue Me, which was the Wednesday right before we went on that Saturday to work at their event. And so that one got viewed 40 something times. And then we did Play Grand Adventures, which is the playground where we went on a Facebook Live tour through the playground. And it's been viewed hundreds of times. So huge increase there, which was really cool for us and them. And where that happened was, I think there's something about Facebook Live that people enjoy because it just pops up on your Facebook and you can just watch some of it, which is great, versus the others are open. Anybody can get the link. We publish the links to our Zoom, so anybody is welcome to pop in and watch and ask questions live, but we haven't built that following yet. So I'm hoping
which will take time.
It'll take time. And then we went on last Wednesday or this Wednesday, 2 days ago, to highlight an alternative crafts or an alternative gifts market sponsored by a local church that raises money for charity. So like getting different types of holiday gifts that give back is really the general idea. And that one was a Zoom interview with a slideshow. I don't know if it's gotten any views yet, because right now the only people who have seen it are, or who have seen the link, already know about the event. So that's where I feel like maybe if we'd have done that Facebook Live, it might have had better exposure. So I've been converted. I'm a believer on Facebook Live now.
Yeah. I think anything live is, it can't hurt. As long as you know how to, you know, operate and function live.
Yeah. and we decided on Zoom just because we didn't really have anything to show.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I see the error in my ways now because it didn't just give, I mean, again, exactly what I just said with the plastic bags. I didn't make it easy enough for people to tune in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my lesson for today.
And you just made a really good point. And this is, I'm going to put my insight into this since I have some experience in the marketing world for nonprofits as well. You just made a really good point where you talked about, or I feel as if you talked about exposure mm-hmm. with the limitation of, well, the only people who viewed it knew about it anyway.
Exactly.
A lot of nonprofits have that issue that they either don't see or they don't know how to combat effectively. Mm-hmm. Where they will put things on their website in hopes that it is going to totally change the game where, you know, the only people visiting your website are people who are already familiar with your organization and therefore they already knew about this. Or they're exactly. going to make a blog post that maybe should have a place in the newsletter instead, where they think that by like featuring highlights of last week's, you know, amazing fundraising event and mm-hmm. thanking all of the donors and putting some pictures is it without then like reaching out to those donors in the form of like an email with all of that is going to do the same thing. And it's almost as if they have some things backwards. But that's so important for people to understand yeah. is that if you're working within your current audience and people you already have a relationship with and it's meant for them to see, then go the extra mile so that you know they see it and so that they feel like, yeah, wow, I did make a difference in that. And these people now are reaching back out and thanking me. And if you're doing something to try to gain exposure and to increase your audience base, make sure you don't just use your typical channels and go the extra mile to try to reach out and, mm-hmm. and to find somebody new. And I just don't mm-hmm. think that's happening that often.
No, I agree because I think, Joe, it comes down to time. Like, because every nonprofit is having to balance cultivation and, you know, maintaining that current base. So I think a lot of times we're trying to find like, what can I do that will reach my current base and nurture those relationships while also reaching out and finding new people. And so that's where I think you get things like blogs and Awareness Wednesdays. And we don't have a newsletter yet because we don't have a following yet. But to your point, putting something to your regular newsletter list is great, but like you have to be really clear about what your message is and who you want it to get to. And you're right, your newsletter is not the way to get new donors. That's why I'm spending a lot of time going out and just meeting people, because I will tell you, I spent a day just sending out emails to people. I did a Google search on nonprofits who fit with our funding priorities. And I just emailed everybody and said, hey, we're Hope for All. We're looking for people to support. We can do that financially or with people power. Here's how to find us on social media. Just, you know, fairly generic. Here's who we are. We would like to support you. And I've only gotten two responses on that email because I imagine people, it goes to junk because we're not in their folder or mm-hmm. the, you know, subject line wasn't catchy enough or you know, anything.
Yeah, it's not easy.
But
cold emails, cold phone calls, any of that stuff.
Forget that. I'm not doing cold calls.
Right.
I'm going to find an intern to do my cold calls. But when I've gone out, I've built the most relationships and have found the potential collaborators where we can really get together and do some good from meeting people in person, whether that's being at events or I met the Playground Adventures group at an event for the Lone Star Charitable Foundation here. So we just had a table at the event And I met them there and was like, hey, let's work. We actually met them before we founded Hope for All. So they've been able to be, they're getting in on the ground floor, which is exciting. And then I met somebody from the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, Haley, at an event that was a class sort of like a funders forum that a nonprofit here in Texas hosts every quarter. So I just went to that and he overheard me talking to somebody about we have a focus on equine related charities and they're building a park in Palo Pinto County, Texas, that is going to have equestrian trails. So there's a potential link there, but I would not have known to reach out to them about, you know, potential partnerships on equine camping. And I've not been at that event. And just having a side conversation over a cup of coffee with somebody and then him saying, hey, here's my card. Let's talk about this. So we've been talking now and that's an ongoing thing. And we're looking how to work together in 2020. So my best connections so far have been from being out in the world.
Yeah.
And meeting people face to face.
Yep. And I think that at the end of the day, that will probably always be your strongest chance of making an impact.
I hope so. I hope we're not getting to a point where everything is behind the screen.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen. It's just too impossible to make real connections.
Yeah. Yeah.
But well, thanks for that insight. So I know that we have Hope for All's Twitter at Hope for All TX on Twitter, and that's the number 4. Where else can people find you if they want to connect with you?
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally.
Hope for All. Well, if you want to see a lot of pictures of food and dogs, my Instagram is at The Real Taylor Bunn.
The Real Taylor Bunn on Instagram.
Yeah, I wanted people to know it was for sure me. So
I love that. And then you're also on LinkedIn. Do you do much connecting on LinkedIn with people?
I'm starting to. I never really saw the value of LinkedIn until Hope for All. And I will say when I post things on LinkedIn, I think it gets more views than on my Facebook page because my Facebook page is like my mom and my aunts who are very involved with Hope for All now. They're our best likers for sure.
as they should be.
Yeah, as they should be. Hope for All also has an Instagram that is at Hope for All TX. Our Facebook is at Hope for All Texas spelled out. You can honestly get into Hope for All. I think the easiest thing to do is to go to the website, which is www.hopeforall.us.
Don't forget .us.
.us. And then on our homepage, there is at the bottom, there's a contact thing that it's just one of those forms that will send me an email, but it also has links to all of our social media there as well. And then I'm pretty easy to find. I would love to connect on LinkedIn. Taylor Bunn is my name. There's a bunch of Taylor Bunns on there. But yeah. Yeah. I always love people liking my food and dog pictures though.
Well, thank you so much, Taylor, for being on today. And I know this is hopefully going to be one and the first of, you know, a handful as we follow your journey and we get to know you a little more and we see what kinds of new challenges arise for Hope for All and what kinds of solutions you've come up with since. So I really appreciate it. And until next time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is my first ever podcast interview. So it was fun. Thank you for making it a low stress experience. And I'm really excited that we get this opportunity to continue to connect and learn and grow together.
Yep, me too.
Thanks, Joe.
Yep, thanks, Taylor.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or giving us a rating or review on your favorite podcast network. We appreciate your support. Until next time.